for a minute. I'll take care of the dishes. No, I'll do it, she insisted when she saw him start to object. It'll give me time to clear my head. I want to push some of this at Mira. See how she thinks. I need to tell Peabody to meet me at the lab, and I'm leaving a message for Harvo that I need some answers when I come in first thing in the morning. Again, what can I do to help? Financials, at least right now, don't play in. And that's a pity for me. He has to have a place. He knew that playground. So I think he lives or works, owns or rents a property in that area. Close enough, he'd pass by it often enough to target it. He needs a place private enough where he can take these women, hold them. She circled the board. He wouldn't keep them drugged out or gagged the whole time, right? What would be the point? And he fed Elder. She was awake enough to eat a meal before he killed her. He knew the bars. He had to spot them to want them. Lower West, Tribeca, Chelsea, maybe Little Italy. Maybe. It's a big area. He has a vehicle. Doesn't mean he owns it, but he has use of one. So I should start looking for a building, a house, a warehouse, garage, something secure enough he could keep prisoners, which is what they are. Owns or rents. Single individual, most likely male. It's a big area, and hell, it may not be owned or rented in his name, but it's somewhere to look. So I will. Could be a workplace, if he runs it, and it has a private, secured area. It's a big area, she said again. Then I'll get started. She dealt with the dishes, and it gave her time to clear her head, align her thoughts. After programming coffee, she sat at her command center to send some of those thoughts, some questions, to Mira. She sent memos to Peabody, to Harvo. Then she called up a map on her wall screen and highlighted each point. Elder's apartment, her workplace, the playground. Hobe's apartment and workplace. He has a territory, she thought again. And her own territory fell into it. Where she once lived, where her friends now lived, where she worked. Did he pass by her old apartment building or walk past Cop Central? Maybe he got takeout from the same places she had once upon a time. Or, she admitted, lived or worked just far enough away he had his own little spots. Bits and pieces, that's all she had. So she gathered them together and worked to make them fit. The mother, she thought again. It was all about the mother. The mother was the key. Before. Joe took care of her in the big old house his paternal grandparents had left him when they died. Died together as they'd lived together for 68 years. His parents had resented that, of course, though they'd had no love for the place. As they'd resented him for using the family money for his education, then settling for work in the ER instead of a more prestigious private practice. She'd begged him not to take her to a hospital, not to call the police. He'd agreed primarily because besides dehydration, exhaustion, exposure, infected insect bites, her injuries were minor. He had the means and skills to treat her at home. And he agreed because she'd seemed so desperate and fragile. She didn't remember her name or anything else. She had no identification or belongings other than the clothes on her back. She knew she'd walked a long way, but couldn't tell him how long or from what direction. When she'd hydrated, when she'd eaten the soup he heated for her, she seemed strong enough to shower, as she'd asked. Still, he stayed right outside the bathroom door. He put fresh sheets on the bed in the guest room, gave her one of his t-shirts to wear. He treated the bites. The poor woman was covered with them. Treated the broken blisters on her feet. He gave her an antibiotic and kept watch in case she had an allergic reaction. She slept 12 hours and woke disoriented and a little feverish. Citing a family emergency, he took off work for 5 days. While she ate, slept, healed, he studied dissociative amnesia. When he thought her stable enough physically, he tried basic talk therapy, cognitive therapy, guided her through meditation techniques. But none of his gentle proddings brought back any memory. She had no name, no past, no possessions. And seemed, as his studies had suggested was often common with her sort of memory loss, content not to remember. "I don't care," she told him. She wore one of his shirts, and they sat in the sunshine in the garden he kept thinking about hiring someone to help him deal with. "You need to know who you are, what happened to you, where you come from, if you have family." "I don't care," she said again. "I feel like my life started when you found me. And everything before that was dark and hard and mean. I don't want any of it, Joe. I don't want to know if I was a terrible person or a nice one. You said there haven't been any reports on someone like me missing or in trouble." "No, but if no one cares enough to look for me, why should I care enough to look for them?" "You cared enough." She smiled at him. Reached for his hand. "You saved me. I was so scared, so lost, so tired, so sick, so alone. And there you were."
"Your memory could come back any time."
"I don't care." She shook back her short, shaggy hair and lifted her face to the sun. "You know how this feels. It feels free. It feels new." Tipping her head back, she closed her eyes. "It feels safe and warm. Will you let me stay?" She looked back at him. "At least for a while. I could clean. I don't know if I can cook, but I can try. I could learn. I could weed the garden and cut the grass. I know you have to go back to work, and I feel stronger every day. I could help you take care of this beautiful old house."
"Of course you can stay until you remember, or you're just ready to go."
She closed her eyes again, but kept the grip on his hand. "I don't think I ever knew anyone like you. I don't think I could have and ever gotten so lost. You brought me back. I don't know from what, and I don't care, but you brought me back. Would you name me?
Listen,
I'd like to use a name you give me, to think of myself as that someone." She smiled at him now, her color healthy again, the raw red bites fading. "A name you like, and I can try to be who she is."
"You need to be who you are."
She smiled again. "It's just a name. I'd like to have one.
Violet. The first time I walked you outside, you picked some violets. You must like them."
"Violet. It's pretty. It's perfect." She held out a hand to shake. "Hi, Joe. I'm Violet. It's nice to meet you."
Now. Mary Kate knew he'd come back. The rumbling sound overhead, the first time she'd thought thunder, meant he left or came back. She usually heard footsteps overhead shortly before or shortly after. She figured he must have a job, so he left in the morning, came back at night. So it must be night. Or evening. Or screw it, the son of a bitch worked the night shift and now it was morning. Time of day didn't matter. Getting away meant everything. She'd tried calling out after the first rumble of the day, or night. She'd banged on the door, called out her name. But she didn't think anyone remained behind the door across from hers, where she thought she'd heard someone crying and calling before. She wanted there to be someone. She didn't care how selfish it was, she just didn't want to be alone. When he brought her breakfast, he carried in a lamp. Though he placed it well out of her reach, he showed her, gleefully, that she just had to clap her hands to turn it on and off.
"Try it, Mommy, try it!"
Terrified, she obediently clapped it on and off, on again, while he giggled. "I made you scrambled eggs and toast and a fruit cup, so you'll eat a balanced breakfast."
"You should have told me it's important to eat a balanced breakfast."
"Didn't I?" He ticked his finger back and forth. "Uh-uh. Now, after you eat, you can wash in the sink and change clothes. It's important to be clean. You shouldn't have let me get so dirty all the time."
"No, I shouldn't have. That was a mistake. I'm sorry."
His eyes glittered in a way that had her heart slamming into her throat.
"You made lots of them, didn't you?"
"Yes, and I'm sorry for all of them. I'm going to do much better." He said nothing, just studied her. She wondered who looked at her so deeply, the little boy or the man.
"We'll see," the man said.
"Now, I made you tea and you have two tubes of water." He set the tray on the cot. Everything disposable, she noted. Nothing with weight, nothing sharp. And still she wondered if she could somehow overpower him. But even as she coiled to try, his eyes flashed to hers. The man's, she thought, the crazy man's, not the little boy's.
"I'm giving you a chance. You should make the most of it."
He stepped back, out of reach.
"Eat what I give you, or you'll do without."
"Are you going? Can't you stay?"
She had to swallow hard, force a smile to her face.
He'd moved to the door, but turned, gave her that hard look again.
"I have to work. I have responsibilities.
I don't have anything to do. Shouldn't I have responsibilities? I should be taking care of you, making your breakfast, a healthy, balanced breakfast." She couldn't be sure if she saw interest light in his eyes or something else.
"That's not on the schedule yet. You're number three. Number two comes first."
"Oh." Her hand shook, but she managed to lean over, grip the sides of the tray to set it on her lap.
"What about number one?" "She was bad. Had to be punished. I had to take her away and leave her like she left me. If number two keeps being bad, you'll get your turn."
"Is there a number four?" He smiled.
"Not yet."
"Please, can't you?" But he went out and the door closed. The locks clicked. She wanted to throw the tray across the room, but understood he'd hurt her if she did. She tried a few bites, waited to see if it made her sick or sleepy. If so, she'd flush it all down the little toilet. When she had no reaction, She ate cautiously, nibbles at a time. She needed to be strong. She decided against the tea. Too easy to drug, flushed it. But the water tube seals were intact. She heard the footsteps and, not long after that, rumbling. She tried the calling out, the screaming, the banging on the walls. As she had before, she looked everywhere for any kind of weapon. To fight the fear, she washed up in the sink, changed into clothes neatly folded on a bench bolted to the floor. The clothes always had buttons or a zipper down the side of the pants leg so she could fasten them with the shackles. He wasn't stupid. He'd made this place. He had a purpose. He was a sick, crazy old man, but no, he wasn't stupid. She couldn't be stupid either. For a while, she tried and failed to pry and pull a pipe from the wall. She'd already tried to use the disposable spoon to turn the bolts in her shackles, but broke the spoon almost immediately. The pipe wouldn't budge, and frustrated, she slammed her fist against it. Metal banged on metal. Furious, she beat her shackles against the pipe until she folded to the ground, weeping. Then she heard it. The answering sound. Metal against metal.
"I'm here! I'm here!" Shouting, she scrambled to her feet. "I'm Mary Kate Covino!"
She thought, as she strained her ears, she heard a faint cry in return. So she tried again.
"Are you locked in? Who are you? I'm Mary Kate Covino!"
She did hear something. She couldn't make out the words, but she heard a voice. She tried shouting louder.
"Can you hear me? Bang once if you hear me!"
When the single bang sounded, she closed her eyes and tears rolled down her cheeks.
"I'm Mary Kate Covino! Can you yell louder? Can you tell me your name?"
It came in a high, thin scream she could barely make out.
"Anna? You're Anna. Bang once for yes, two for no."
One bang. "Okay, okay. Anna," she said aloud.
"Are you chained up too?"
One bang. "God, God." She sipped some water, cleared her throat, shouted,
"Do you know how long you've been here?"
Two bangs. She leaned against the wall, tried to clear the fear. She shouted questions, added three bangs for I don't know. It felt like hours. She couldn't be sure they communicated. Once in a while, she made out a few words. She learned the crazy man had grabbed Anna and locked her in a room just like hers, chained up, no window, drugged. When her voice gave out, she pushed her burning throat one last time.
"I'm sorry, Anna. I can't yell anymore. I have to rest, but I'm here."
After the single bang in response, Mary Kate drank the last swallow of water, then crawled onto her cot. She needed to rest, to think. She wasn't alone. 8. When she couldn't find a new angle to probe, when she found herself circling the same path with the same results, Eve pushed away from her command center. There was simply nothing more she could do. A part of her believed Anna Hobe's time was ticking down, but there was nothing she could do to stop that clock. The lab, she thought as she walked to the board again. She had to hope the lab provided some leads, some data, some something she could get her teeth into. It cycled through her brain again. Tattoo, piercings, makeup, hair products, perfume, clothes, shoes. She'd given the lab rats a big goddamn bouquet of forensics. They'd better come through. She walked into Rourke's office to find he'd switched to water while he worked. He'd shed his tie, his suit jacket, rolled up his sleeves, tied back his hair. How appalled would he be if he knew she thought of this as his Rourke cop mode? Very, she concluded, so she'd save that for when she wanted to annoy him. Anything I can use? A large area, he reminded her, with plenty of buildings, commercial, residential, a combination, rented, owned, condemned, in the rehab process that could meet your criteria. I'll take them. He glanced over at her and immediately saw both stress and fatigue. It would take you days, if not weeks, to vet all that fall into the general parameters. It'll take a bit more time to refine and eliminate some of the possibles. It's going to be a single man. Understood. But a single man may own or rent under another name, a business name, a false front, or a legitimate one. A single man may have recently broken ties and not yet changed the ownership or lease, or may be legally bound to hold said ownership or lease in a business name, a partnership, marriage or business, and so on. And you know all that as well as I do. Since she did, she walked to his window, back again, then dropped down on the slick new sofa he'd installed when they'd redone their offices. He'd kept the portrait she'd given him for their first anniversary on the wall across from his command center. It made her feel a little sentimental to see the two of them under that arbor of flowers on their wedding day. And reminded her, with a kind of jolt, their third, Jesus, anniversary was coming up in a few weeks. Which meant she had to come up with another gift. It never ended. She scanned his office as if an idea would jump out and dance. All she saw equaled attractive, efficient, stylish, and important. And she realized she'd never really looked at his space from this angle. She'd never actually sat on this sofa. He had shelves with stuff on them, artfully arranged. She noted the photograph he'd asked her for, and she'd hunted up. One of her in her academy days. He had the medal that the NYPSD had bestowed on him, their highest civilian honor. Some books, actual books, because he liked actual books, held upright by a pair of what she thought were dragons. And among the other bits and pieces, some of which looked old, some of which were likely priceless, the photo of his mother holding him when he'd been an infant. The child she'd never had the chance to raise. Personal, she thought. All of it. Things he kept at home rather than in his big fancy office in Midtown. Looked like she had to think of something personal. She scanned the office again. It sure as hell didn't strike her he needed anything else in here. What's this wall color? She wondered out loud. He glanced up. Some sort of sage, if I recall. Like what Peabody's gonna burn in the playground once we toss this asshole in a cage? I couldn't say. What he could do was switch the search to auto. Do you ever sit on the couch? I've never sat on this couch. He rose, walked over, sat. We're sitting on it now. Your office is about three times the size of my office at Central. Easily. But it's smaller than mine here. Why is that? First, because the original purpose of yours was to replicate your apartment so you'd give it up and live with me. And second, I don't need the room to gather up teams of cops, feed them, brief them as you often do here. Or need the room so we can sit for a meal together. You put in a lot of time over there, with teams of cops and without. Expert consultant, civilian.
I do.
I don't spend much time in here, consulting or whatever.
You don't.
Do you want me to? He brushed a hand over her hair.
I would very much appreciate, no.
She let out a short laugh. You don't think I could help negotiate a deal for a couple rings of Saturn or give input into the design of the next indispensable widget?
I think it's very fortunate the purchase of any of the rings of Saturn, which aren't on the market, by the way, or the design of the next indispensable widget, aren't a matter of life and death, law and order, or justice served. But if they were, you'd find a way.
I think that's an insult wrapped in a compliment. Or the other way around. She started to get up. He tugged her back down.
It occurs to me, this very nice sofa has yet to be used to its full potential.
Because sometime during the sitting she'd relaxed, she didn't object when he eased her back.
For napping?
Some other time. He released her weapon harness. She tugged the tie out of his hair.
It's comfortable.
We've got a big bed, probably being used by a cat right now, but this is comfortable.
And roomy enough, he added, as he pressed his lips to the pulse point in her throat.
Lights 20%, he ordered. When they dimmed, he looked down at her.
Quieter. It's nice to have some quiet time with you.
She smiled, raised her head to nip at his bottom lip.
Bet it doesn't last long.
Is that a challenge or a request? She bit him again, not quite as lightly.
Guess.
He responded exactly as she wanted, with a deep, dazzling, drugging kiss that washed the day away. If she could have gotten her hands between them, she'd have gone to work on his shirt buttons. Since she couldn't, she just wrapped around him.
Quiet time could wait. She welcomed the need and the wild, the demands and the desperation.
It felt right, it felt necessary, to just shove aside everything but their bodies, locked tight, their hearts already drumming in tandem, their wants already meshed. She dragged his shirt out of his pants so her hands could rush under it to skin. When he simply tore her shirt to get to hers, she let out a quick laugh that ended on a moan. Then his mouth was on her, taking, feeding, feasting. Everything in her reached for more, so she arched against him, ground center to center. Primal. After a day struggling to find logic inside insanity, she wanted the primal. He reached for more, fighting to shove her harness, her tattered shirt off her shoulders, but she reared up, took his mouth with hers again until his blood burned. He muttered in Irish, lost, lost in her, in the feel, the taste of her, in the need that radiated from her to lodge in him and spread, spread to scorching. He pulled at her belt, and she ripped his shirt as he had hers. Half mad, half dressed, they grappled with clothes, and, in the rush, rolled onto the floor. He hit first, so she straddled him. Already breathless, she took him in. Deep, deep, fast, crazed, hips pumped as if life itself hung in the balance. He filled her, as he'd filled so many empty spaces. Outside the window, the city lights spoke of the world she'd sworn to protect and serve. But here, here, this belonged to only them. He rose up, wrapped around her as she had him. Their mouths met again, ravenous. Then she arched back,
When he watched her fly, when her body shook and her cry of release was his name, he said hers and went with her.
They lay tangled in clothes or remnants thereof. She still wore one boot, with her pants leg trailing from it. He, she noted, had managed to get both his fancy shoes off and his pants.
I believe I guessed correctly.
Even in her current sexual haze, he made her laugh. I gave you a pretty big hint.
You did. And I believe you lured me over to the sofa so you could have your way with me.
Worked, too, though ways were had all around.
This used to be a really nice shirt.
Yours, too.
More where they came from.
I do, however, believe we've earned the big bed. Galahad will have to make room.
We still didn't bang on that sofa.
We'll try again, sometime soon.
She rolled to tug her pants up. We have to get rid of the evidence.
Evidence? Torn shirts. We can't just dump them somewhere.
He found it oddly endearing when she actually buttoned, two buttons, what was left of hers.
Somerset will find them, so they must be destroyed.
He held out her second boot before he picked up his clothes.
I can promise he won't scold us, as he'll never mention it.
He'll know. Adoring her, he scooped her up and started to the elevator.
You're still naked. Doesn't it bother you to just wander around naked?
I'm not wandering. I'm going to bed with my wife.
After we destroy the evidence.
The child without a name had to kneel on the chair to reach all the pretty colors the mother used to get pretty. She wanted to get pretty, too, because she was scrawny and stupid and ugly. If she could be pretty, the mother would be nice to her. She poked the brush into some of the pink powder and dabbed and swiped it on her cheeks. It made her laugh.
Pretty.
She played with some of the glittery stuff and tried smearing it on her eyelids. Delighted, and she had few delights, she tried more colors. She wasn't sure of all their names, but she knew things had names. She didn't. She didn't know how old she was, had no concept of years or age. She knew the concept of pain because it hurt when the mother or the father smacked her, and the concept of hunger when they forgot to feed her or didn't feed her because she'd been bad. She didn't understand bad, except that she was a lot. She knew the concept of fear, because she lived in it. But sometimes the father tickled her to make her laugh, and sometimes his tickles hurt or made her feel scared and sick. If she could be pretty, it would be good. It was good when she wasn't hungry, and when they didn't lock her in the dark, when they didn't give her something that made her wake up feeling funny and wrong and in another place. When you were pretty, people were nice to you. Like when the mother got all pretty, the father smiled and said things like, Stella, you're a knockout. She could be a knockout with all the pretty colors. For a while, she played with the tube of lipstick when she figured out how to wind it up, wind it down. She didn't know toys, but she embraced the game before she smeared the gooey stick over her lips. Red. She knew that color. Red, red, red. It tasted funny, but she didn't mind because pretty. Then the mother came in, and proud, she beamed in the mirror. And the fear came fast. It wasn't nice, she saw in the mother's eyes. She screamed the words that meant bad. Brat,
bitch, goddamn fucker. The cracking slap against her thin pink cheek snapped her head back. The pain burned, and the second slap knocked her off the chair. Her head smacked the floor, so now the pain screamed like the mother screamed. She didn't know the concept of hate, but she saw it in the mother's eyes when hands gripped her, nails dug into her arms, shaking her, then it felt like she flew. When she landed, hard, crying because crying was all she had, she was somewhere else. Outside. But she wasn't allowed to go outside, not by herself, and hardly ever. She knew outside because it was out the windows. She sat on something with colors, and it wasn't hard like the floor. She didn't know the names for them, but she saw swings and slides and springs with funny animals, climbing bars and carousels. Fascinated, she forgot the pain, the fear even, as a line of blood dribbled from the corner of her red slicked mouth. Getting up, she bounced on the springy safety surface on her way to the swings. She pushed at one, watched it rock back and forth. She saw the ladder to the slide, though she didn't know the words for them. Walking to it, she climbed up and stood for a minute, not sure what came next. Curious, she sat, and as she shifted, she started to slide. A quick snap of fear, and then the thrill. She landed on her butt on the springy surface, then scrambled up to do it again. When she landed again, a woman stood there. She cringed, but never thought to run. They always caught you if you ran, and smacked and smacked. But the woman crouched down. Figured it out, right? I guess you would have. She didn't see mean in the eyes. She saw sad. And her own. Her eyes. You're going to have to go back, and I'm sorry about that. I can't stop it, Eve told her, told herself. Not yet, anyway. She didn't speak. You didn't talk to anybody but the mother or the father, ever. You're going to get through it, and you're gonna be okay. I should never have let Richie talk me into having you. Eve stood, turned, putting herself between Stella and the child she'd been. Your mistake. But then, you didn't give it a lot of time before you took off. Left him to beat me and rape me. He turned out to be a loser just like you. I stuffed food in your mouth, changed your filthy diapers. What did you ever do for me? Not a damn thing. Wasn't it odd? Wasn't it strange, Eve thought. Stella wore clothes very like, not exact, but very like, those of the dead woman on the bench. I hated you before you were born. And a skinny whelp like you wouldn't have been the moneymaker Richie figured. I copped to that pretty quick, and I had my own life to live. Eve gestured to the body on the bench. Somebody slit her throat. Stella looked back, shrugged. Probably deserved it. She didn't. You're gonna end the same way. A blade across the jugular. Some would say you deserved it, but I can't. I don't say it. You deserved a cage and a long life inside it. You wanted me dead. If you could have, you'd have killed me like you did Richie. You're wrong about that, but everything about you is wrong. Take another ride, kid, she told the child, standing frozen behind her. Can you take me home with you? Not yet. Sorry. She's gonna make your life hell for a while,
so take another ride first. When the child ran to the ladder, Eve turned to Stella again. I just figured something out. It was all gonna happen anyway. The beatings, the torment, the rapes. But at least I didn't have you making it even worse. You did me a favor by leaving.
Fuck you!
As the child let out a sound of joy on her way down the slide, Eve saw the backhand coming. She let it come and knock her out of the dream. Rourke had an arm around her, with his free hand stroking her face. Come back now, he murmured, as the cat butted his head against her side. I'm okay. I'm all right. But she let her head fall to his shoulder as he pulled her in. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't one of the bad ones. Could have fooled me. Us, he corrected, as Galahad tried to worm between them. Rourke eased back to give the cat room and studied Eve's face. He'd called for lights at 10% when he'd realized she'd been in the grip of a nightmare. He bumped them up to 20 now. You were crying in your sleep. He brushed a tear away with a fingertip. It wasn't me. Or it was, but kid me. You'll tell me. I'll get you some water and you'll tell me. Yeah. You're dressed, she realized when he got up for the water. It's dark and you're already in a suit. What time is it?
Nearly 5:30. I have a hollow meeting with Prague shortly.
Prague, sure, of course.
I'll reschedule it.
No, don't. It wasn't that bad. She took the water.
Really?
You'll tell me, then I'll decide whether to take the meeting or reschedule.
Okay, fine.
It's all this mother's stuff that kicked it off. Stella dream. In those eyes, those glorious blue eyes, she saw guilt and grief and fury. I should have realized this would stir that up. Even you can't fix everything. I don't know how old I was. Older than Bella, she began, and told him. In the end, she said when she'd finished, it was a good thing for my subconscious to work out, because in the end was truth, what I said to her. She did me a favor leaving. If she'd stayed, it would have been worse. If she'd stayed, I might not have gotten away. You took yourself to the playground.
Yeah.
Symbolic dead mother, throat slit, on the bench. And Stella, who ended the same way. It's logical. While the guilt and rage had eased during her telling of it, the grief for the child she'd been remained. He pressed his lips to her brow, just held them there. You gave yourself another trip down the sliding board.
Yeah. Well, I knew what was coming, so why not grab the fun for a second? I don't much get what's fun about sliding down a plastic tube, but I guess it seemed like the thing at the time.
She sat back a moment, wished the water she'd finished would miraculously reappear as coffee. I think I'm leaning toward his mother. The killer, dying or abandoning him as a kid. I think I may be leaning there because of yours dying, mine taking off, and I need to set that aside and work the facts and evidence. Though she seemed steady again, he stroked her hair, couldn't seem to stop touching her.
Your instincts are every bit as valuable as facts and evidence.
Usually I'd agree they're almost as valuable, but I need to keep some distance this time. You need to go to work, and you don't have a tie. You always have a tie. She ran a hand down the front of his shirt.
I'm okay, she added, knowing he'd object. I'm going down to the gym, sweat the rest of this out. Go buy Prague.
I'm not after buying it. He leaned down to touch his lips to hers. Just a piece or two. He picked up the tie he'd dropped when he'd rushed to her and slid it under the collar of his shirt. What do you think Mavis would do if she came on Bella playing with her makeup? Laugh, then help her put on more. And there you have it. I'll be an hour. That works for me. She spent another minute in bed, stroking the cat. You know, between you and Rourke, I ended up with a couple of solid moms. Not an insult, she added, and gave him a good scratch before she got up. She fed him, and if she indulged him with seared tuna, he deserved it. After pulling on shorts, a support tank, she rode down to the gym. A good sweat, she decided, because in truth, seeing herself as a child, that helpless need, that helpless fear, unnerved her. She programmed a 5-mile obstacle course run, and on a whim, on the streets of Prague. When she finished, dripping and satisfied, she spent another 15 on resistance and powerlifting before she stretched it out. Her initial thought was to end the whole deal with a swim, but she found herself turning into the dojo. She didn't like meditation. In fact, it usually annoyed the crap out of her. But she decided, considering all, to give it a shot. She programmed 5 minutes with the master, sat on the mat, crossed her legs. She breathed, exhaling tension, or trying to, as instructed. She let her mantra play in her head, which was her secret, fuck this, fuck this, fuck this. She pictured a blank screen, normally the best she could do before her mind started wandering to a case or paperwork or why chocolate wasn't one of the major food groups. The blank screen turned a soft blue, began to ripple gently. She floated on it, just floated until the chimes sounded. You did well, the master told her. Take the calm and clear into your day. He put his hands together at his heart, bowed. Namaste. She bowed in return. Namaste. When she stepped out of the elevator, Rourke walked in. And here's timing, he said. I went to Prague too. 5-mile run, obstacles. You probably bought or already own some of what I ran through. Gonna grab a shower. Oh, hey! She shoved at her hair as she walked toward the bathroom. I meditated for, like, 5 minutes. Okay, probably 3 before I got there, but that's 2 minutes and 50 seconds more than I've managed before. She hit the bathroom, called back. And I fed the cat. Don't let him bullshit you. Rourke glanced over at Galahad. It appears the lieutenant's back in form. When she came back, he sat, the stock reports muted on the wall screen, a tablet in hand and the cat across his lap. Breakfast, whatever he'd chosen, sat domed on the table. She poured coffee, then lifted the lids to find he'd gone for the full Irish. You're worried I'll skip lunch again. If you do, he set the cat on the floor, you'll have a good breakfast in you. I guess we're going to see the Irish next month, right? He looked up, met her eyes. I'd like to. Fine with me. She sat and started on the bacon. That quick trip to catch Cobb doesn't really count. Where else? He rubbed a hand on her thigh. Where would you like to go? You've got something in mind. You always have something in mind. I thought you might enjoy Greece. Play tourist among the ancient sites. Then there's a villa on Corfu. Sun-washed beaches, olive groves, vineyards. See, you always have something in mind. Your villa? He smiled. Not yet. We'll see how you like it. Yeah, I'm gonna be critical of a villa in Greece. What were you working on? On the tablet. Not work. I was looking at the final design for Mavis's studio. He picked up the tablet, brought it up for her. Seriously? It looks so... professional? Yeah, it does. Sure, it's got Mavis all over it. The colors. Lots of color in that. I guess it's a lounge or break area. Energy, Mavis claims. Play area for the kid. And the next one. Kitchen area. Rourke brought the view in. Full bath, half bath, a dressing area. That for when she wants to get into costume. But the equipment, the studio proper, state of the art. And she's learned her art very well indeed. It shouldn't be such a surprise, Eve admitted, to see the Mavis mix of the colorful and foolish with the absolute solid. Back when, I never thought she was serious, working at the Blue Squirrel. She didn't sound serious either. Not like now. Suited her audience. Got her attention. Her style's still very much her own. Hobe has a poster of her, signed, personalized, on her wall. I didn't tell Mavis that. No need, is there? No. Mavis might have gone into Mike's place. It's the kind of place she'd go for fun. Maybe even met Hobe at some point, but it doesn't connect, so no point in telling her. I'll have a list of possible properties sometime today. That'll be good. I'm counting on the lab giving me something. Getting an early enough start I can hit there before Harvo or any of them get started on something else, so I can cut the line if I need to. She polished off most of the eggs. I need to check in with Norman about the stripper. She doesn't fit, but who says he can't adjust? I need something I can start pulling out and tying together. It's been less than 24 hours. Not for Hobe. She topped off her coffee, then took it with her into her closet. She half expected Rourke to come in, eyeball what she chose, but she heard him warning the cat to cease and desist. She went for brown trousers, a navy jacket, and spotted a shirt that had needle-thin stripes of both. How could he complain about that? She hit on navy boots with brown laces she swore hadn't been in there the day before. When she came out for her weapon harness, her badge, and the rest, he waited until she'd shrugged into the jacket. You look ready to roll, Lieutenant. Because I am. That 5 miles set me up. It might have been the meditation. Hope not, because I don't think I can pull that off again. I think it was a, what do you call it? An aberration. Send me whatever you've got on that search. We can start slimming it down. I'll do that. He rose, pointed a finger at the cat when Galahad took a very casual step toward the table, then pulled Eve in and kissed her. Take care of my cup. I'll do that. 9. Since she'd left too early for the ad blimps to fly, Eve drove through the relative quiet of traffic snarls and horn blasts. She kept the windows down because the day dawned balmy. Glide carts already did brisk business with cart coffee guzzled by pedestrians trudging their way to work. Air trams carried more, to or from, as did the maxi buses that could never seem to do more than poke along. Delis and bakeries had their doors open. She caught whiffs of bagels and pastries, along with the cart offerings of fake egg pockets. She spotted a couple of dog walkers, a jogger who ran in place at the corner waiting for the light, a guy in a business suit riding an airboard, and the woman, eyes down on her link, he'd have mowed down when she walked in front of him if he hadn't had damn good reflexes. She shook her head when the woman shot up her middle finger at his back. "Your fault, sister. Be glad you're not bleeding on the sidewalk." The first ad blimp of the day cruised over as she pushed through downtown traffic. It hyped sales on beachwear, which made her think of sun-washed beaches in Greece. "Told you you'd get through it," she mumbled, thinking of the girl she'd been in the dream. "Told you you'd be okay. I didn't tell you how one day, between locking up bad guys, you'd spend time in a villa in Greece. Life's just weird." She got to the lab just before the change of shifts and considered her best approach. She could hit Berensky, lab chief, and nag him about the makeup and the rest. But dickhead was dickhead for a reason, and she hadn't thought of a bribe she might need. She'd try Harvo first, and that would give her a good gauge on progress. She found Harvo just settling in at her workstation. Her purple hair had a scatter of green highlights, maybe to match the purple low-tops with green laces. She continued the theme with purple pants and a green tee with a bright white 42 emblazoned on the back. "Hey, Dallas, I figured you'd come in. We had a flood yesterday, but I got going on the hair and I took the clothes. Thought you might. Got anything? Still running. But I can tell you, her hair was cut within 12 of time of death. Fresh snips, both with scissors and a razor. Shampoo and conditioner under the styling gel and setting spray. You'll want the brands there, so I've got that going. She used a lightener and highlights, but hadn't had that done in about 2 weeks. On a rolling stool, she zipped to the other end of her station. I can tell you the jeans are Hotshot brand, Diva Series, ultra low rise in size 4. And I can tell you they discontinued the Diva Series in 2015. The Hotshot brand, definitely low rent, went under altogether in 2024. I can tell you the jeans had been washed using Keep It Green organic detergent. So you can tell me a lot. Oh, I got more. The top, polyester blend, sexy lady brand, and that's a store brand, or was, from 2002 to 2006, when they went under after the owner shot her lover and the sexy lady he had on the side, who happened to be her sister, and Loverboy's first ex-wife. It was a pretty big scandal in Greenville, Tennessee in 2005. Single shop, Harvo added. Strip mall about 25 miles south of Nashville, Tennessee. Had to be bought there originally, and in the way back. A lot more recently, somebody repaired the loose sequins, sewed them back in place. I've got the data on the thread for you, but it's standard. Better workmanship on the repairs than the original. He knows how to sew. Gotta say yeah there. Also gotta say there are thrift stores all over hell and back where you can find these articles. Maybe a grandma's attic, too, but once he had them, he took care of them. The black ribbon, she continued, velvet, black, any good craft or fabric store. Tennessee, Eve repeated. It's a long way from there to here. Yeah, but that top made the journey. Something let out a tuneful series of beeps. That's my girl. Harvo zipped back to the other end of her counter. Display it, baby. So here we go. Shampoos, pearl drops, ocean breeze scent, same with the conditioner. That's a drugstore-type brand, and been around since the late 20th. Styling gel, same era. Lowell's brand, Superhold, and same brand on the setting spray. Harvo spun her chair around to face Eve. Decent, affordable, and widely available. Nothing special there, sorry. Everything adds. How about the shoes? Desi the newlywed's got the shoes. I got a gander, and he'll give you more, but I'm gonna say the way back, like the jeans and top. Not designer level, either. I'll check with him. Who's got the makeup? That would be my man Dauber. I know he got started on it yesterday. Listen, I got a need for the fizz. His cave's on the way to vending, so I'll bop you over. Appreciate it. I didn't know you were a baseball fan. Not really. Obviously baffled, Harvo cocked her head. Why? 42. Eve pointed at Harvo's shirt. Jackie Robinson's number. Oh, 42. No, man. 42's the answer to all the questions in the universe. Hitchhiker's Guide. While Eve pondered what hitchhiking, the number 42, and universal questions had in common, she recognized the clump of Peabody's boots. Yo, Peabody, Harvo hailed her. How's it hanging in rehab land? Hanging, boss. You have to come check it. Gonna. Been up past the arse the last days. Got the hair products and clothes ID'd for you. Reports to follow. Heading over to Dauberville in makeup. Solid forensic chemist there. If he doesn't have it nailed yet, it's because of the past the arse deal. Peabody fell into step with them. So, Douglas Adams fan. Who isn't? Harvo responded. She made a turn, then another. Then paused outside one of the mini labs, where a man with neatly cropped gray hair stood, hands on hips, as he studied formulaic data on a screen and muttered to himself. Hey, Dobman! He looked momentarily off balance when Harvo took a step into his area, then circled a finger in the air with a wait-a-second motion, cocked his head, said, Let it rip, Ethel. He gave the screen a nod, turned. He smiled vaguely at Harvo. You brought me company. Dallas and Peabody. Yes, I know. I've testified in a few of your cases. Eve placed him. Veteran lab rat who did solid work that held up in court. He wore pristine white sneakers, pressed khakis, a pale blue collared shirt with a white lab coat. You need the beauty products, the scent. I explained about the past the ass. He offered them a quiet smile. We have been very busy, but I have some partial results. I hope to have a full report by midday. We'll take whatever you've got now. Of course. I'm out. Gonna grab a fizzy. I can swing back if anybody wants. You know my weakness, but no, thank you. Harvo grinned. Dauber rules. No food or drink in his cave. Cha all. If you just give me a... He didn't finish as something buzzed, snagged his attention. He walked to a counter screen, nodded, leaned down to look at something in a microscope. Yes, that follows. He straightened again. Sorry, there are several products to identify. I'm fascinated you were able to smell perfume, actually eau de toilette, and preserving it helped, of course. There was only a minute sample, and very faded, but we have a match. It's called Party Girl. Not a perfume, but, as I said, an eau de toilette. Inexpensive as compared to a perfume. Widely available? Why, yes, indeed. According to my data, there was a perfume form in the 1990s and into the early 2000s, but only the more moderately priced toilet water is currently marketed and is targeted primarily to teens and young adults, with its notes of bergamot, vanilla, and patchouli. Now, I've just gotten the full breakdown on the foundation product, the full face enhancement. He gestured to his counter screen. It's actually a tinted moisturizer, 2-in-1, brand name Toot Sweet, a play, I suppose, on the French. He shrugged, smiled. Drugstore brand? Eve asked. Well, you would find it there in the beauty section. In other venues as well. Food markets, beauty supply shops, online, of course. It fits with the bronzer, which is the same brand, in their Sunkiss shade. The blush, however, is Betty Lou brand in Popo Pink.
Hey, that's the first blush I ever bought. It was peachy, the shade for me, but it was Betty Lou.
Peabody sighed a little in nostalgia, then straightened when Eve stared at her.
Affordable. Accessible.
Yes, it is, Dauber confirmed. I suspect when I'm finished with the eye enhancements, the lipstick, I can tell you it wasn't a lip dye, we'll find the same. Widely available, well-established products, affordable. But established and popular, he continued, because they're inexpensive and dependable. Eve got the picture. The killer could have bought them damn near anywhere. Nothing special, nothing unique about them. When we find him, we'll find the products. You can establish the samples you have came from the products we'll find. Absolutely. I still have highlighter, setting powder, the eyebrow color, eyeshadows, 4 different shades, and those blended. Eyeliner, mascara, lip liner, lipstick, the nail color. He offered that vague smile again. I'm afraid midday might be overly optimistic, but I'll do my very best. I'll take what you get as you get it and appreciate the effort. It's what we do here. She didn't expect any revelations on the shoes, and found the same pattern when she hit the newlywed in charge. Off-brand, size 7.5, manufactured in Cleveland, and sold in discount shoe stores all over the country, between 2002 and 2004. Rather than driving straight into Central, Eve pointed across the street. Drugstore. I want to look at the setup. Chain stores like this usually have a big selection of makeup and hair products, Peabody said as they started to the crosswalk. Trina gives me, like, a family discount on hair products, and I usually hit one of the beauty product centers for skincare and makeup, but I still browse through, usually pick up something because, well, you never know.
Never know what?
They joined the throng at the light, where the business types looked bored or annoyed, and the early tourists looked goggle-eyed.
If you'll find the perfect lip dye or the eyeshadow palette of your dreams.
Yeah, I'm always on the hunt for those. She shot Peabody a warning look as they crossed the street. We're not buying anything.
If I find the perfect lip dye, I can note down the name and get it later. Though that would mean several hours, maybe a day or more, of my lips denied perfection.
Cops don't need perfect lips.
It's possible, not outside the realm of possibility, that my perfect lips could so dazzle a bad guy, I'd have him cuffed, charged, and transported before he recovered. When that happens, I'll personally buy you a lifetime supply. I'm getting that on record, Peabody said as they pushed through the doors. Over this way, she gestured and took the lead past aisle after aisle of what Eve thought had nothing to do with drugs. Unless you considered candy a drug. Which, maybe. Or diapers and baby stuff or cleaning and laundry products. The far side of the store held a massive section on the drugs purported to make you look, smell, and feel better. The promise filled shelves, spin racks, and end caps. There's a whole section for feet. When your feet look and feel good, Peabody proclaimed, you look and feel good. Is that what's up with the invisible shoes? Do they have a deal with the foot product people? That's a definite fad. All it takes is one stub of the toe, one blister to ruin the look. In her element, Peabody selected a lip dye, scanned the packaging, and studied the result on screen. She smiled, pursed her lips, shook her head. This is not the perfect lip dye. Setting it aside, she picked a powder blush off a spin rack, repeated the process. This is a pretty good color, but not perfecto. Stop it! Eve scanned the products, noted the names of the brands Dauber had given her. She saw a woman at another testing station. She had a cart loaded with diapers and baby paraphernalia and said baby in a halter strapped to her chest. She looked at Peabody with exhausted eyes. Does this do anything for me? Like, make me look human? I'm ready to settle for looking human. I haven't had a full night's sleep in 6 weeks. Peabody shifted stations, studied the screen. It's a pretty color, a happy color. And you know what else? She found an eyeshadow, scanned it, held it up so it transferred to the woman's eyelids. I use something like this when I've had a stretch of long nights. It just brightens you up, right?
It really does.
You should treat yourself. Look what you did. This adorable baby. Leaning over, Peabody cooed.
I love him so much I could burst. It's just, my husband and I are going to try to go out to dinner, if we can stay awake long enough. My mother's going to watch Jonah.
Jonah.
Peabody cooed again, and the woman grabbed her arm.
I used to know how to do this, but I have baby brain. Help me. It's been so long since I fixed myself up. I want some new products, and my brain's so tired, I don't know where to start.
Oh, well.
Peabody sent Eve a look. Eve just waved a hand and wandered the aisle.
Exfoliant and a brightening facial mask. Let's get that canvas prepped first.
Eve found the hair products Harvo and Dauber had identified, did a kind of running tab in her head as she found various items the killer had opted to use on Lauren Elder. As she wandered, studied, calculated, she watched other people browse the aisle. Some just wandered as she did. Others went directly to their choices. Others tried the screens, rejected or added the product to their cart or handbasket. When she'd had enough, she looked back to see Peabody and the woman she'd taken under her wing exchange hugs before the woman strolled off with her cart and kid.
That was fun.
Peabody bounced in her boots.
Londa and her husband are both teachers. She got pregnant on their honeymoon. They didn't really plan it, but they decided to go all in. This is their first time out as a couple since Jonah was born, So they're going to the Italian place where they had their first official date 3 years ago. She told you all that and bought all the stuff you said to buy when she doesn't even know you? She was just looking for, you know, some backup.
Eve considered that as she very definitely led the way out. I only saw two males come into that section. One for hair junk, the other for some skin deal.
Oh, you get guys. It's still more a female area, I guess, but I'll bet you don't see many males load up on everything like your new friend did today. The skin and hair gunk, the face gunk, eye and lips gunk, the smelly stuff. A man who did would stand out some, because it's not the usual. Somebody would notice your new friend, too, because she loaded up. And there's the baby thing, but a man filling a cart with all those products would absolutely get noticed.
Oh, I get you.
Peabody thought it through as they crossed the street again.
So, if he shopped brick and mortar, he probably didn't buy everything in one place. A little here, a little there. Takes more time, but who's going to notice some guy buying vitamins or cold meds and an eye palette or lipstick?
That screen thing you did. Can you do that online?
Sure. You just go to a site that has that feature and carries the products, call them up, virtually try them on.
How about a photo? Trying them on a photo. Peabody got in the car, strapped in.
Jesus, that would be smart.
Get a picture of Elder, maybe in advance. Grab one off her social media or take one yourself while you're stalking her. Use it to pick the products that most closely make her resemble the mother.
Sick and smart.
He could have ordered everything online that way, or the bulk of it. Hit a few other venues. When we get the full list from the lab, we'll search what sites carry all of them with the try-on function. That's a solid start. For the clothes, thrift stores, second-hand stores, vintage stores. She gave Peabody a brief rundown on Harvo's report. He knows how to sew, she finished.
Well, not really. He knows how to repair.
A seam. Peabody traced a finger over her neck. Or tack on a loose sequin. Probably sew on a button. That's just basic.
I don't know how to sew on a button. Lots of people don't.
If she'd known how, Eve thought, Rourke wouldn't carry the gray button that had fallen off her suit the first time they met.
It's basic, Peabody insisted, as Eve zipped through the last light and made the turn into Central's garage. He's good at repair. His stitches are precise, but making something different, like that top, you can buy sequined fabric and sew a pattern that simple together in like an hour if you know what you're doing. You dig it out of a thrift shop. The making one might cost more, but if it ended up in a vintage shop, you could make three for what it'll cost you.
Frowning, Eve pulled into her slot.
Why?
Vintage adds panache, quirk, and cost. It adds panache, quirk, and cost to buy something somebody else got rid of after they wore it, if they call it vintage instead of secondhand?
Yeah, if you're talking about something from a go.
Eve sat a moment, running it around. He's gonna need another outfit, since Elder didn't work out. She pushed open the door, kept running it as they crossed to the elevator.
Your grandmother dies. Oh, don't say that! Not yours, Peabody, somebody's. And somebody's grandmother has a bunch of clothes from back when. Where do you take them when you clean them out?
If it's me,
And it's not me because my grannies are going to live forever.